How long have you been advocating for First Nations rights and particularly truth-telling?
I would say from the early 1980s, I started to identify that conversations couldn't be respectful if there wasn't truth-telling and truth-listening. So from the 1980s, whenever source of employment I've been in, I've made sure that Aboriginal voice has been heard and it's been reflected through the industry I was in.
From, you know, back to the 80s and now, like, what does it mean to be part of advocating for truth-telling? Why is it so important for you?
It's important because we want to be able to be respectful and start to make change. We have a responsibility, and I certainly have a responsibility, to speak up and speak the truth on behalf of my people. So that's my responsibility. But we also cannot go forward if we can't talk truth. We just may as well not be in the room together. And past government policies have led to some very bad results for Aboriginal people because truth-telling hasn't been done in the initial stages.
What do you think truth-telling means to you?
Truth-telling is, for me, it's about acknowledging the past. It's about acknowledging and respecting what happened to Aboriginal people that was out of their hands, and to value what Aboriginal people bring to this beautiful country of ours. I don't believe we can go forward together if we don't simply acknowledge the past and respect what Aboriginal people have had to endure since invasion. The welfare system that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people had to go through has to be acknowledged. That is the truth. It happened. The removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, the institutionalisation, the stolen generation. So when we're having truth-telling, we've got to acknowledge that governments did make mistakes for whatever intent they had in mind, that they did make mistakes. And the voice would have been an opportunity for legislations to be better informed affecting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
As you talk about instances like the stolen generation and the welfare system, in terms of you personally, what do you think is something that the broader public should know more about?
The welfare system has, I would say, affected all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It certainly affected me when I was an 18-month-old baby. I had a Aboriginal mother and a non-Aboriginal father. And as children, the government of the day decided it was best for us to live or be removed from our mother and not be given to our father, but actually removed from our mother. So from a very early stage, I've had this understanding of what it was like to hear the word welfare. As a young person, I used to run out the back of the house and run into the bush when somebody said, "Welfare's here." Such was the fear of being removed. Now, I lived in urban New South Wales in the city of Sydney and the Botany areas, so you can only imagine what it would be like if you lived in a remote or a country town. The fear that was put into us as Aboriginal kids that we would be removed, and the stories we heard of never being seen our parents again, is something that I've carried with me for 60 years. And so when I talk about truth-telling and truth-listening, I don't lose the reflection of what happened to me. And I was only one of many, 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 many kids that it happened to.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that, Uncle Gary. Have you seen your parents since?
Well, I actually was. The department decided to remove myself and my sister from my parents for whatever reasons. But I was extremely lucky that my elder sister just got married and she was able to, were able to go into her care. So although we didn't live with our parents, we did live with my sister and brother-in-law. And I was raised and educated by my sister and brother-in-law. Now, I didn't see my father for 20 years and I didn't see my mother for 20 years. And it was just before they passed that I actually got to know them. And there was such... It was a difficult time to re-engage because they had such such shame that this happened to me. And they always had every day. They had a thought of what, you know, what could have been, or if I was removed and put with somebody that wasn't family. So that the meetings after 20 years were extremely emotional and difficult. But I'm not the exception. I'm part of the rule that has happened to a lot of Aboriginal kids.
As you say, just before they passed, you were able to meet them. How did it feel when you met them?
Extremely difficult. When you when you don't have the opportunity to call your mother mum to a face or your dad dad to his face, it's very difficult to see almost a complete stranger and be able to say, mum or dad, I couldn't do it. I couldn't acknowledge my father and say, hello, dad, how are you? I just shook his hand and said hello. I knew who he was because I was introduced by my brother and the same as my mother.
And so can I ask, like, how did it kind of come about and how old were you when you were able to meet your parents?
It came about because my elder brothers who were some, you know, 12, 13 years older than me had kept saying to me how much my father was a good man and my mother was a good woman, and they wanted me to engage. I was in a bit of denial, and I didn't really know how I would engage or how I would actually speak with them, how a conversation would come about. If we talk about truth-telling, the first five or six times I met my father at the age of 25, I asked him lots of questions, and one thing that drew us together is we told the truth. I told him exactly how I felt about being abandoned as a small person. He told me what it was like when the threats of being removed. So there was a lot of truth in what we talked about, and I had a lot of respect for my father because I didn't understand why it happened, and he told me how it happened and why it happened. But it was through truth-telling. We didn't tell any lies. He listened to what I was feeling and my anger, and I listened to him. And we just told the truth, slightly different because my mother was in the hospital and I visited my brother in the hospital every day, and I passed her in the corridor and I knew it was my mother. So I then spoke with her and we went back to my brother's room, and the three of us sat down and we started talking, and I need to let a lot of the emotions out. My mother had to let a lot of emotions out, and we had to talk a lot of truth.
And this new report called Coming to Terms with the Past identifies the barriers and enablers to effective truth-telling between First Nations and non-Indigenous people. Can you tell me why the report is so important?
I think the perspectives of the report are really clear, an Aboriginal perspective about telling the truth. And I'm not saying non-Aboriginal people don't tell the truth. Sometimes they don't know the truth. But this report is actually enabling them to actually have a process of learning the truth, seeking the truth. So I was really enthusiastic in about September last year when I was interviewed, and I wrote a bit of a paper about truth-telling. You know, you can make data say anything you want, but I think it was very accurate to what non-Aboriginal and Aboriginal people think about telling the truth. Yeah, in closing, I'd just like to say I don't want people, Aboriginal or non-Aboriginal people, to be worried or scared about learning the truth. The truth is very sad. Personal history, past legislations, what has happened to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people is very, very sad. It's wrong, and we need to acknowledge it's wrong.